Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
And I do hope you're well. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. It's that time of the week where we sit down and discuss mental health matters. Now, there's lots to get our teeth into today. Thanks for downloading this if you're checking us out on the podcast, or thanks for listening live via Radio City Talk. Today on the programme, we're going to be looking at a whole host of different aspects, including mental health budgets and mental health budget cuts. There's an organisation that have been a guest with us on Mental Health Monday before. They've been in contact with us this week to tell us about the funding cuts that they are suffering as a result of changes to their funding, which is due over the course of the next year. And we are talking about a serious hit when it comes to the amount of cash coming through the door of this particular organisation. We're talking about the Young Persons Advisory Service here in Liverpool, YPAS, as they're known. So stay tuned for that. We'll have the full story there. Also, special mention for the fact today's International Father's Mental Health Day. You can check out episodes 17 and episodes 9 of Mental Health Monday if you want to hear more about some of the organisations that work around dad's mental health. But I'll tell you on the programme today what International Father's Mental Health Day is all about. And we've got a guest on who's behind a new book which is looking at recovery from mental health matters as well. So we're going to have some great guests on the programme, some really interesting topics as well. Stay tuned with us on Mental Health Monday. If you want to get involved in any of the stories that you're hearing, or if you're thinking, that rings true with me, maybe I've got a contribution to it, then email in mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. Type in hashtag Mental Health Monday into your social media and you'll see links to the show and to our social media as well. Do get involved in the conversation. mick@radiocity.co.uk is the email address if you want to come on and share your story. If you're listening to the show today and thinking, actually, I can do something about that, or I can help in a particular organisation or help in a particular way, we'd love to hear from you. We're going to start by talking about mental health funding. So there was an organisation that joined us on the programme way back at the start of Mental Health Monday, the Young Persons Advisory Service. You can go back to the previous episodes of the podcast and check it out. Listen to the edition. And they were talking about the work they do with young people in the city of Liverpool and beyond. They got back in touch with us in the last week or so to tell us about their budget and the amount of money that they would receive in terms of their funding to provide the services. This week, we've been informed that that budget is being cut and it's taking a big hit, nearly 50% of its budget gone. Monique Collier is the chief exec of the Young Persons Advisory Service, YPAS. She started to explain to our reporter, Adam Phillips, where they get their funding from and why that's changed going into the year ahead. Let's take a listen. Radio City Talk.
YPAS receives significant funding from Liverpool CCG, and unfortunately NHS England nationally are experiencing significant pressures on their budgets. That being said, all the CCGs across the country are then facing financial pressures on their budgets. What that actually means going forward is those services that are providing healthcare, whether that be physical health or mental health, are faced with significant funding reductions. Based on the significant pressures that the CCG are facing, they have two significant pots that they have to subscribe to. One is the priority pot, where they have to fund the must-dos within physical health and mental health. And the other pot is called the discretionary pot. Unfortunately, the voluntary sector sits within the discretionary pot. And unfortunately, YPAS is a voluntary sector organisation. YPAS is part of a CAMHS partnership, so it's CAMHS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, that have actually received a significant cut. The providers within the CAMHS partnership ultimately receive the cut. So for YPAS as an organisation, we've received 43% funding cut to our 2017-18 budget, so it's happening for us now.
Can I ask you about that budget then? What was your budget before, and what will be your budget when it is reduced as well, that it now it has been reduced, I should say?
Well, I won't talk figures, because if I talk figures, then I'm not sure. So I won't talk figures, but what that means for YPAS, 43% is significant. So if I just give you a flavour of what 43% means. So last year alone, YPAS reached over 2,000 children and young people. We reached over 400 parents and carers, over 300 families. We worked in 48 primary schools, and over 20 secondary schools. Receiving a 43% funding reduction clearly suggests that 43% of those figures are at risk of receiving mental health support from YPASS as an organisation, whether that be mental health support, practical support, or mental health support based on a therapeutic intervention. 43% of those figures are at risk.
So it's fair to say then that actually, I mean, I know 43% is nearly half. Is it fair to say that you could see those figures reduced to nearly half in the near future? The amount of people, the amount of families, children, and obviously places that you go to as well, reduced nearly in half?
Absolutely. Year on year, the referral rates for YPASS is increasing. Year on year, locally and nationally, the presenting issues for mental health is increasing. And that's down to services like our CAMHS providers, because we're destigmatising our mental health services. Our mental health services don't look as clinical as what they used to be. So we are very good at normalising what mental health is. And I guess, as a group of providers, we're a victim of that success, really, because we've destigmatised what mental health services look like. But yet, so I guess based on that, the demand has increased. But yet, we've received a 43% funding reduction. And I'm saying 43%, if you compare that to the fact that year on year, mental health referrals are increasing, based on this year's figures, that 43% is going to look significantly higher because the referral rate is increasing.
What do you fear, Monique, will happen to those children that you now support that will presumably require help, those children and families in the future, without the service that you provide as well, with the lack of funding that you're now facing?
Yeah. So for us as an organisation, what we fear is what's going to happen to those 43%. Because we genuinely, as a sole organisation, cannot work with 43% of the referrals that we used to work with. And so our fear is what happens. Strategically, these 43% need to not feel the impact of what's happening nationally and locally. The presentations for children, young people and families who are experiencing mental health difficulties is significant, and us as a city need to feel responsible for how we can continue to support those needs. What we can't do is walk away from 43%. So strategically, I will be reaching out to Liverpool's strategic leads and commissioners, because we need to think collectively about what we can do about this for Liverpool.
There's obviously children and families out there with really complex needs, really, really tough battles ahead as well. What do you worry will happen to them without the services that they need, I suppose, to get that support as well?
I worry that their mental health needs will remain unmet. And whilst they remain unmet, they will escalate. And once they escalate, they then become extreme and severe, and they then will need a referral to a more intense service, as in a specialist mental health provision. And it could result in tier 4 provision, secure units, hospitalised, quite intense mental health acute services. And the idea of services like ours is to prevent children and young people being referred into more acute services. So that's my worry. My worry is that 43% of mental health service presentations in Liverpool will remain unmet.
Ever more concerning, as you said, that actually referrals are going up. You're seeing an increase in the amount of people, amount of children, amount of families that require the help from services such as yourself as well.
Absolutely. So year on year, the referral rate is increasing, and it's increasing at a referral rate of around 7% per year. Currently, YPASS receives around 47 referrals a week. That's over 200 a month, and that's based on last year's figures. I have no doubt that those figures will continue. What are we supposed to do with that as an organisation? Are we supposed to gatekeep these referrals and not take any further referrals once we've received, if we talk about calculations, if for us to just work on the premise that we only receive 57% of last year's referrals, what does that mean? Does that mean we gatekeep and we don't take those referrals? It's really important that we don't do that. But in order to avoid that, our strategic leads and commissioners across Liverpool, we need to do something about it now, because the referrals are increasing day by day.
It might be shocking to ask this, but is there a concern that, that lives could be at risk because of these funding cuts, that people aren't getting the services that they need as well?
Absolutely. We have a duty of care, and there's lots of risk factors associated with young people with mental health difficulties wanting to receive access in an organisation that's non-stigmatised and doesn't look like a stigmatised mental health service. There's so many risk factors associated with us as a service and us as Liverpool not supporting those mental health needs, because if we don't support them, they remain unmet, and whilst they remain unmet, they escalate. When they escalate, it's left to the young person themselves to address their own mental health difficulties. How does a young person address their own mental health difficulties without receiving specialist support? So for some young people, that's unachievable. They wouldn't know how to do that. That then generates, or that then suggests, that there's lots of risks attached to that in terms of self-harming behaviour, attempted suicide, and unfortunately, in some cases, the attempted suicide in some cases will be a successful.
So the question will be, you mentioned it just before, who do we turn to help? I know the CCJ, NHS England presumably have their hands tied. That's coming down from high above in government about the need to make these savings. Where should services such as yourself turn to? You mentioned maybe looking closer to home, Liverpool, all the services here. Who are you calling out for help then?
Yeah, so I guess there's two areas there for us. One is the CCG's hands are tied. They've received a significant funding reduction from NHS England. And NHS England has rules and they have regulations. And for every CCG, they have to generate a surplus. And that's no different for Liverpool. So Liverpool's CCG has needed to generate its surplus, and ultimately services like ours are cut. So that's twofold, really, for YPASS. I will be reaching out to our strategic leads and commissioners to think about how we, or how they, can collectively fundraise and match fund the massive financial gap that's occurred here for YPASS and ultimately Liverpool. And the obvious one for us is YPASS is a charity. YPASS is a 50-year-old charity established in 1966. And for 50 years, we've been serving our Liverpool communities with the mental health difficulties of children, young people and families. Based on us being a charity, we need money. So again, I am appealing for any funding out there that people are wondering, what can I do with this? Any pro bono support, any donations, anything that could further help our charity to further help the mental health needs of this significant 43% funding reduction for Liverpool. So that's an appeal for us as a charity in terms of donations and additional funding.
And just finally as well, to maintain the amount of services that you currently run and try and get that funding up, I suppose it is obviously a matter of urgency. How quickly do you need to get help, get support, get funds in to sort of maintain the kind of level that you are currently at as well?
So YPASS was given 90 days to consider how it was going to reduce 43% of its services by reaching out to our other CAMHS providers. 43% of our children, young people and families want to be seen by YPASS. So that's really, really difficult. In terms of timescales, it's happening for YPASS right now. So in the last 4 weeks, YPASS's waiting list has gone right up. We've already lost staff. So we've needed to think about what we do with that 43%. So all of our staff are on jobs at risk, and we've already lost a percentage of our staff to redundancies. There's a small window where we are managing to maintain a small element, a small team of staff, in the hope that we can receive funding in order to ensure that we can keep their posts. The clock is ticking, and we have about 3 or 4 weeks to determine what the rest of YPASS's provision is going to look like for the city.
That's Monique Collier speaking to us on Mental Health Monday. Our reporter Adam Phillips asking the questions there. Bleak, isn't it? I mean, it is, in terms of the amount of money that they're talking about there, the funding cuts that they're facing. Imagine 43% less income into your own house. Imagine the changes that you'd have to make. And the clock is ticking. Monique's setting out there that they're going to have to do a lot of work and do it very quickly. And I guess they'd be very keen to hear from you. If you are an organisation who can help, or if fundraising is something that you could support them with, mick@radiocity.co.uk is my email address if you want me to send the information on. But just type in Young Persons Advisory Service, YPAS, letter Y, P-A-S, into your search engines, and it comes up in terms of that organisation and the work that they are doing there. Of course, we've asked the Liverpool Clinical Commissioning Group for a statement. They have sent one through. NHS budgets, it says, are under increasing pressure both locally and nationally, with demand for health services continuing to grow. NHS Liverpool Clinical Commissioning Group needs to make significant savings to its budget over the next 2 years, which unfortunately means that we cannot continue to fund all of the services we have in the past. Around 90% of our budget has to be spent on the provision of core NHS services, including GP services, hospitals, community health and mental health. So we have to find savings in other areas. After a review of other spending, we have made the very difficult decision not to renew or to reduce funding for a number of different services provided by voluntary and community organisation, which includes YPAS. These decisions have not been taken lightly. We fully recognise the valuable role that the voluntary and community sector, including YPAS, play in supporting the health and well-being of local young people. That ends the statement from the Liverpool Clinical Commissioning Group from within the NHS. So that's it as we have it at the moment. You know, we had this idea, didn't we, about 5-6 years ago about the big society that you would get organisations, you know, charitable organisations coming into to public life, if you like, and filling in a gap or taking on responsibility. And that's what organisations, it would appear like, YPAS have absolutely done. Then unfortunately, though, when those big NHS pots become available and they start looking at what cuts they need to make, unfortunately, the cuts come to those charitable organisations who have really built a wonderful reputation in the last few years. It's a real shame that those funding cuts are coming. And I've got a feeling it won't be the last time we hear about funding cuts to mental health services. If you've got a story of your own within your own organisation, do drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. Just wanted to give a mention on the show today to International Fathers Mental Health Day, which is today, the 19th of June, 2017. You can find out about International Fathers Mental Health Day in episodes 17 and episode 9 of Mental Health Monday. You can find Mental Health Monday via the website radiocitytalk.co.uk. Listen to previous editions. There's loads of information online as well about what International Fathers Mental Health Day is all about, with research showing that at least 1 in 10 dads suffer from postnatal depression, that they can experience antenatal anxiety and depression too, that fathers tend to be diagnosed with clinical depression after the perinatal period. The rate of suicide among men aged 30 to 44 years increases around the time of becoming a dad. There's loads of facts around this one as well. Around 2 in 3 dads who should have received support are no longer together within the family unit as well. And fathers are seen as the main source of support for the mother and the children at this time, and often feel the pressure of failing to live up to expectations. Mark Williams is somebody who's done a great deal of work with this one. We've spoken to him on Mental Health Monday in the past. You can check out those episodes as well, or type in International Fathers Mental Health Day into your search engines. Hear all about it, because of course people will tell you that becoming a dad is an absolutely wonderful thing, and absolutely it is and can be for many, many people, but for 1 in 10 it can also trigger some real issues as well. And there is some help out there if you are suffering yourself, or you know somebody who is, and there are support networks where people can share their stories and you can share your stories with them. Check it out online, International Fathers Mental Health Day, and also available as part of previous episodes of Mental Health Monday. You're with Radio City Talk. Coming up in a few moments' time, a man behind a new book about recovery from mental health matters on the way here on Mental Health Monday.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Yeah, hope you're well. It's Mental Health Monday for another Monday here on Radio City Talk. We always say, if you want to get involved in the show, drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. If you're part of a project, maybe. Maybe you just want to share your story. You feel now might be a time to come out and speak, like many of the people we've had on the programme. Then absolutely feel free to get in touch and get in contact. One person who did so is James Withy from the Recovery Letters Project. And I was really keen to get him on the programme because I think it's a really interesting idea, and it's based around books and reading. And James joins us on Mental Health Monday. James, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you coming on board.
That's all right. Nice to talk. How are you?
And in terms of books are quite near the start of your mental health journey. You used to be a very avid reader of books. You used to get through a couple in a month, and then just one day you thought, hang on a minute, I can't seem to concentrate on these anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I was just, I loved books. I always kind of read loads and loads of novels. And then, when my depression struck kind of big time, literally nothing. So, I went from... reading a few novels a month or two, you could hardly reach half a page. So it just kind of went completely. No concentration, couldn't read at all. So it was extraordinary, actually.
And one of the aspects of your own sort of mental health story, if you like, is this idea of recovery. Your project is called the Recovery Letters, and this was the desire. And I think it's really interesting, the desire to hear other people recover, to get this idea that there was a pathway out of the depression that you were facing.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was first ill, I think people were really reluctant to say, James, you can get better, there's hope out there, And so I was kind of at a point of going, well, I really want to hear sort of other people's stories of recovery, that you can get through this. And there was really nothing out there. I would have, my psychiatrists and doctors would give me huge CBT books on depression that were just enormous. I couldn't read a page of them. So I was sort of sat in my room in a psychiatric hospital going, actually what I want to read is about stories of people who've got better. And that's sort of when the idea sparked off, basically.
And in terms of those stories, did you know where you were going to find those stories from? Or was it a case of just hoping that those stories were out there and would come toward you?
Yeah, I was just hoping they would be out there, really. So we set up a Twitter account and I wrote the first letter. And then I said to people, look, if this is something that you'd like to do, kind of let's write a letter to people that are suffering at the moment saying, look, depression tells you it'll never get better, but, depression lies. And actually, you can find a way through this. I asked people to write letters, and then they sort of came in really quickly, and we created a website, and it's gone from there, and now a book. So it's just taken off in the most enormous way. I think it's because people feel so alone with depression. It feels like you're never going to get out of it. And I think when there's other people saying, do you know what, we felt those things as well, and actually, we're here, we're still living our lives. It's hard sometimes, but we're still doing it, and you can too. And I think it's those sort of small shots of hope that other people can give you that can really help.
I mean, ultimately, you set it up to for your own journey, if you like. But do you think there is a, mutually, that people will be able to look at it and go, well, actually, what works for James actually works for me? Are there themes, for instance, that you've seen within those recovery letters, that you think could play out into a wider audience?
Yeah, there were so many themes. There were so many... familiar feelings with depression that you're never going to get better. So, I was convinced I would never get better. So, I would have gone to the bookmakers and placed massive odds on me never, ever, ever getting better. I was convinced. And a lot of people say that, they're never going to get better. That's one really familiar theme. And it's about trying to see that that's depression and not you. That's the illness talking. That's the illness talking, and about trying to separate out, yourself from the illness, which with mental health is just so hard because it feels like you, but then you're trying to make it the illness, and it just gets really confusing. So a lot of the letters will say, look, you'll feel like you'll never get better. That's the depression talking. It's not going to be that way. It can get better.
Yeah, sometimes people ask me about, mental health and how I picture it now, because I speak to so many people about it. I almost picture it like a paperclip. It's like a paperclip which attaches something to you, which is now, because it's attached to you. And sometimes it's quite difficult to remove, and then sometimes you do remove it, but it leaves a bit of a mark. And, that sort of idea of the paperclip was the only one that I could actually think of, it is that idea of it being sort of part of you, but then not part of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well, I guess one of the key things as well, I don't know if there's necessarily a happy ending to the book, but is there a sense from those letters that people... have recovered, or is it that people are recovering?
I think a bit of both. I think, we're very careful not to say, look, depression is a horrendous thing. It's not all going to be, roses and chocolates when you get out of it, And it's like, and for me, depression is something that I live with. It's not something that I've recovered from. It's something that I still battle on a daily basis, you know. But I think it's about saying, look, it's just not going to be as bad as it was. The pain that you're feeling now, that acute pain, is not going to remain. So it is, you know, the people that write in the letters are not going, yay, we are fully recovered and everything's fine. They're going, yeah, we still have tough times, you know, we still have tough times, but, you know, I'm doing this and this is, you know, this is what I'm doing with my life. And I never thought I would get through, but I am still doing it. And I'm a parent and I've got a job and, you know, all these other things. And I think that's just so important. That's just so important. You know, we're not saying, look, you know, it's going to disappear. You know, we're saying, look, it will get better. It might sort of integrate with yourself, a bit like a paperclip, like you're saying. But it's saying, look, it's not going to be as bad as it was. And things change, you know. And that's just so important when, you know, depression is telling you that it's never going to change.
And the people who've contributed to the yeah. project and to the book as well, are they as wide a range of people as you can get? Or is there a certain type of person who might contact you, men, woman, age, job, yeah. like a job, whatever it would be?
Just the whole span. You know, we've tried to be really careful to get a huge span of people all over the world. America, Australia, you know, and really everywhere we've tried to get men and women of all ages, young people, old people, a huge span of people writing about their experiences. So, you know, I'm sort of confident there's something for everybody. And because there's a lot of universal themes, I actually think no matter what, you know, what gender you are, you know, what age you are, those messages come through really clearly. And I know that because they kind of work for me. You know, I read them, you know, I read the letters and it's been amazing to read them first before they go into the book. And, you know, they've helped me. So, you know, I'm really confident they're going to help other people. And it's, you know, depression has no limits on who it affects, you know, as mental health, you know, it affects just absolutely everyone, billions of people across the world. But yeah, we try to get a kind of a broad spread of people, you know, in the book, writing a letter.
The book is available. You can check it out. Amazon have got like the preview page ahead of the release of the book in July as well. The recovery letters addressed to people experiencing depression. Are you working with Olivia Sagan as well?
I am. Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Olivia Sagan. So she's we've co-edited it together. So it was me that sort of set the project up, but we worked together on the book, which has been great to have someone else do it. And she's a psychologist and it's been great to have her input. So yeah, we've worked together on it. And yeah, it's out in July, which is really exciting.
And in terms of the letters and how people can find out more information, your website, therecoveryletters.com, has got all the links on it there as well. Therecoveryletters.com, Amazon, and I'm sure all good bookshops will have a link to the book as well. I really look forward to reading it, James, because it's really interesting to see what's going to be in there. We appreciate you coming on the programme as well.
Fantastic.
And thanks for your time.
No problem at all. Okay, thanks, mate.
That's James Withy from the Recovery Letters Project, the website therecoveryletters.com, and that edition is out in July. Great to get him on the programme. So happy International Father's Mental Health Day. Thank you for getting involved in that. We're available as a podcast as well. Thank you for people who are downloading that. If you'd be kind enough to like and subscribe, give it a rating. Anything above 3, we're pretty happy with. Do get involved. Mental Health Monday, back next Monday. If you've got a story you want to share, drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk.
Radio City Talk, tackling the stigma.